617 was the.
I'm Karen Armstrong.
Present.
Herb Now.
Here.
Catherine Greenberg Funes.
Here.
Frank Hay.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Stan Kroski.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
George Palmer.
Here.
Steve Trombley.
Here. One more.
Oh, Jeff Stitt, sorry.
Jeff again at the bottom. Under C, approve the agenda. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education approve the agenda, which includes the late item agenda. Thank you, Richard.
Second.
Thank you, Leonard. All in favor?
Is it going to be discussion? Are we having a late item agenda?
Yes.
This is it in front of you.
They said late.
There was point out the is there just the one change?
Oh, okay.
That one in the minutes of the last meeting, the 20th, were added.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, I got two. No.
Did you get the updated?
Okay, I guess I got it. 11/27/07. Got it. Man, I'm impressed.
You ready, George?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll open the floor to any public comment.
Did you vote on that?
I take the poll.
Oh.
It was one through the discussion.
That's true. I'm sorry. You threw me off with that. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. We'll open the floor to public comment. Is there anybody here that would like to make a comment this evening? Seeing no comment, we'll move to item 3. With minutes, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on this the regular meeting November 13th and special meeting November 20th. Motion, please. Discussion.
I just have a question.
Yes.
Code of conduct that's with the revised agenda is the same as what we got in the packet.
Not quite. There's just a couple little changes.
By voting on the minutes, are we voting on the code of conduct?
No, that's under policies.
That's under policy, and it's just a review tonight.
Thanks.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Any other questions? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under new business, A, personnel resignations. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to accept the following resignations on the date indicated of those two listed below.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Karen. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under appointments, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education that the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated of the two listed below, both non-instructional and the effective date.
Yes, sir.
Second.
Leonard and Earl. Second. Questions?
The person that was added, what area are they going to be in?
Substitute bus driver.
Michael Friend.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We don't have to put in a dollar amount.
They're under substitute. We have a substitute rate.
So we don't. We just don't have to state it.
Right. You catching up, Frank?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under B, policy, review of the following policies. We'll start with the voided check policy. Any comments or questions? And I would like to point out that the audit committee would like to propose a change to that. We reviewed it in our committee. left mine behind. Down in the bottom on the last paragraph, where it says, checks on the outstanding checklist that have reached stale date status but are not in the custody of the district treasurer will be voided. And we'd like to add before that that they'll be voided after all exhausted attempts to clear the proper payment of the check amount be added into that, so that all attempts will be exhausted before that is voided.
Quick question. Yes. If it's going to be voided automatically at 90 days, this will put the treasurer on notice at, say, a 60-day point? Of course, it follows through trying to contact.
With the contact, yes.
So actually, at 60 days, the treasurer is going to have to, she's got to keep an eye on it, pretty close eye on the process.
She does that now. Interesting, great question, actually. But as a course of habit, they peek into these things on a pretty regular basis. There just isn't a timeline that was established. The policy, was to speak to the what if. After all, any and all efforts have been made. It's now 90 days or 80 days or 100 days. What would be the magic time? And that's why the policy was proposed the way it was. But have the confidence of knowing that they look now almost on a monthly basis.
And one more question. Sure. If we void the check and whoever was supposed to receive that comes back to the district and asks for a reissue, when that happened?
Yes. Jen was there tonight and we were able to talk to her about this. She said that most of the time when she contacts the people, she asked them, how come you haven't processed the check or cashed the check? Is it because you lost it, or is it? And she said that in most cases it's a lost check, so she will tell them that
just
she's going to void it and renew it. And that's why we're adding with the exhaustion of all the other attempts to make sure the check is taken care of. I think Karen had a question.
We wanted to stress that all these things are done before the liquidation of the purchase order happens, because when that happens, the appropriation goes back into the account. So that's why they do this process. It just wasn't expressed in the policy.
Yeah, they're already doing it. We just wanted to say that.
Put it officially.
I have two questions. The first is there a charge to the district when the check is voided by us? And secondly, which may sound nonsensical, I'm not sure what's involved. And secondly, the first two sentences under procedure seem to speak to certain efforts that are made, like a phone call, a letter. Is that perhaps a good place to put the clause about exhausted efforts? Those
to add something to what it should be?
Well, there's two sentences that speak to efforts.
Yes.
Directly under procedure.
Right.
That perhaps that might be a place you could also put, if you wanted that term exhausted efforts. What other efforts besides the phone call and the letter?
Jen said she calls by phone and keeps tracking them down until she gets them.
Yeah, so anyway, and then if there's a charge to the district where checks have been voided.
I think no. She said no.
I don't think there is. There's no charge in avoiding a check.
We covered that too. She said no.
There's a charge to stop paying it but not to void a check.
Right. Earl, you had a question?
No, I was just going to talk about liquefying the purchase order.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Just wondering, why was 90 days chosen? Because in the business world, 6 months is usually the figure used for stale dated checks. I'm just wondering why we went
because it's printed
days.
On the check itself.
Oh, it is?
Yes. Right on the check it says after 90 days.
Void.
So that's why we're using the 90.
So do we need to make a motion to do that?
Well, we're going to make these changes, and it'll come back as reading number one. Okay. Because this is a new policy. It'll come back at our business meeting as the first reading. So we're going to add the one statement about exhausting all, and then we're going to add by phone or by mail, correct?
It's already in there.
Is it?
Yes.
in the first paragraph.
Under procedure.
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Anything else? We're ready to move this forward. Next is the interscholastic athletic regulation. I'll turn that over to Mr. Ingalls.
Sure, be glad to. This portion of the of our discussion this evening is a direct response to questions that have been asked over the last several weeks regarding our athletic code of conduct and athletic regulations. So the athletic director took the task at hand and began to review not only the current language as you understood it to be because of the board approved that language previously, but also being sensitive to the concerns that have been raised over the past year, probably longer, to make sure there's a goodness of fit. The general philosophy has not changed at all, and you will see that the purpose is the development basically of the whole student, student as a, as an individual and student also as an athlete. So with those issues in mind, Ed took the task of reviewing each and every one of those areas to see can they be improved upon to be more specific to the mission statement of the policy, but at the same time make it clear enough for our student athletes to understand the rules by which we would ask them to operate. And so what you have in front of you is the compilation of that work that he's put in. The email attachment that I sent to you showed those in blueprint. We had a couple of last second changes on wordsmanship, if you will, and I believe you have a revised current copy in front of you. And it's so that document that Ed will speak to as he walks you through the changes or the proposed changes as have been outlined for you. You can go at this a couple of different ways. I would suggest one obviously would be to stop and start with each section, or wait to the entire overview of the proposed changes are made and then entertain questions and feedback from you. So having said that, I turn it over to Ed.
Ed, how would you like that done? You want to have questions at the end or?
I don't want to question anybody's intelligence by reading the whole thing to you. So if you have questions to go along, please stop and ask. And you can write things down. These are only recommendations. I wish I could take credit for doing all of it. I think the nice thing about this was that Ms. Rainbow came to me, suggested we take a look after the incident we had. And I think it opened our eyes. We had a parent come up here and express his concerns instead of slamming the code of conduct. He had concerns, and they were reasonable ones. And it opened our eyes. And I talked to Ms. Rainbow the next day, and it wasn't just thrown on my lap. We both were able to pull it apart. I did it as well as he did it. We were able to get together a few days later, sit down for a couple hours, and put it all together. So this wasn't just my doing. This was a collaboration of two people getting together and working things out. And I thank you for that. This was very helpful. So, on page one, the opening statement, the lines it's crossed out, it says that the athletic appeals committee shall consist of athletic director, school administrator, coach, parent, and a school board member. We made that to read any appeals for the enforcement code violations we made to the superintendent and or violations review committee, depending upon the violation. As we go along towards the end of it, the appeals process, you'll see how cut and dry it is. It was both my opinion and Ms. Rangel's opinion that there was a couple of people on that put them in a pretty tough spot in there on the committee, being the parent and a board member. That's a real tough spot for somebody to decide his fate, whether for them to move on or stay in the program. So that's one of the changes we made. If you have any questions, please feel free to put in any time. Ed? Yes?
On that, you're talking about the makeup of the violation review committee.
Correct.
So is it going to be a standing committee for that, or is it going to be chosen for each incident?
I think as we go along, you'll see that the first appeal goes directly to the superintendent.
Okay.
And then after that, there's another appeal that we will form a committee and sit down and discuss it. Is that what
think, if I'm correct, you're asking, would the committee group be a standing group?
Right.
And that would be our intent, is to have it be an identified group that is always the review committee.
Right. My concern would be that it could be stacked against a particular student athlete or something, or the perception may be, if you just mm-hmm. named it for that committee, well, you pick that person because they're against my son.
Right, right.
You know, this so would if we be had a standing group, committee,
a standing group.
We would avoid
I would approach the composition to be, and then jump to that in a few minutes, but the composition members of we'd approach and say, here's the task, if it's approved. I would like you to be on this committee. Would you be willing to do that as the year? We'll change the membership maybe the next year,
right.
But be the standing committee for the year.
And I think as we go along, we also have the students on that basically to advocate for them, mm-hmm. to correct as a character for this type of thing. So, skipping over to.
No changes on two.
Is there changes on two?
Nope. Yeah. I was just saying out loud. I don't see any changes on two or three.
Page four, page 11. School suspension detention. Any student who's temporarily suspended from school or is in school suspension for a full day will be ineligible to participate in any practices or contests during this time. Students serving ASD after school detention will be eligible for that practice or contest. Their ASD is not considered a legal excuse for missing practice time or a game. Basically, we took out the ASD after school detention. Students serving ASD may attend practices, but their ASD is not considered a legal excuse for missing practice. I believe the reason for that, again, in my opinion, was if you looked at our practice schedules, especially during the winter, there's nights we don't practice. We start our practices at 6:30. Our detention runs from 2:30 to 3. So if a student serves their detention from 2:30 to 3 p.m., they basically serve their punishment. They've done what they've had to do. It's, in my thought, why can't they come back for a 6 o'clock practice to participate in the sport instead of having them sit home? Again, if it's any ideas or suggestions, please, I welcome them. There's been cases, too, where some of the detention, I don't think, again, my opinion doesn't fit the crime. The teacher or the kid will get up out of his seat and he'll get detention at night when, you know, maybe he was told once not to. So, again, that's just something I thought of changing, and Mr. Amo agreed to that. We went along with that.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Is that a suspension? Does that mean suspension for any reason from school, such as you're suspended for 6 months because you brought in a weapon?
OSS is in there, ISS, but I think a weapon would be considered a pretty major violation.
Well, it doesn't stipulate it. It just says suspensions.
Yeah. So in its present form, that's what you're right.
I wouldn't
you're
want
right.
A parent to challenge us
mm-hmm.
on a severe suspension such as that. I'm sorry to bring it up.
No.
But it says who's serving for half or more of a day.
So if they're on out of school suspension.
Yeah, they're serving for more than half a day, so they're automatically ineligible.
Yeah.
Where's that at?
That's right there.
First line.
New paragraph.
The first paragraph.
I'm sorry, I went right to the ASD.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Would that accomplish it? It could
because
be.
Because for a severe suspension.
It would automatically
get
past that.
As long as if they're out for more, or if they're even in school suspension for more than half the day, then they're ineligible. They're automatically ineligible.
Good.
Good point.
Thank you.
Good.
Skipping over to page 7 of 11. You might have page 12 of 5. Penalties and recommendations. To violations of code penalties. If you want to read through that really quick, there is a major violation and I guess somewhat of a minor violation. And if we put dropping the sport in there, we didn't consider that a major violation because it did raise some eyebrows, I guess, at the last meeting. And this took a lot of time, I think, on both Ms. Amos and my part. We sat down, every time we thought we had a solution, there was a loophole. And that was kind of the beauty of the meeting, you know, with two people and more, another set of eyes. So we both hammered something out, and we came with kind of a reciprocal type of punishment. Any student who joins a team is expected to continue that team for the remainder of the season. That has not changed. Going down to the first violation.
So you're saying dropping a sport is a major violation?
No,
just the opposite.
No.
Because you have it listed under D.
says the penalty for a major violation shall consist of the following as applicable. But there's nothing underneath it. Maybe that's what...
They're dropping a sports under it.
That starts a new area.
Violation code.
Yeah, but there should be something under B.
What's under B is on the next page, but dropping a sports under B, so it makes it look like dropping a...
Oh, you just have to move it.
A major violation.
Move it.
Yeah, you're right.
So we've moved B out.
Put it under duration of code of conduct under there. That's probably where you should put it. Just kick it up a paragraph above the violation.
Yeah, you just put it above.
Or there. It can be that there is a distinction to be made between a major and a minor violation, and put that in that first paragraph.
Right.
And then let the first one speak to dropping the sport and its terms, right. And let the second one speak to major.
Yep.
So you're saying dropping a sport is a minor violation? Is that what we're saying?
I don't think we're recognizing dropping a sport as a major or a minor violation. I think we wanted to separate it from everything else, and it's kind of reciprocal.
So it needs to be moved somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's what we're saying.
That's what I suggested.
If we took B out,
yeah.
There's no lead-in saying major or minor.
Right.
It simply starts with this particular consideration, and it brings certain consequences to it. Major gets introduced for the first time when we take out, if we now took out other major violations and just said major violations or
right.
other violations, you can take out major entirely.
I think one thing that has to be kept in mind, too, in deciding what you're saying, Scott, is that I know in the past I've asked kids to come out for football. And I've asked them to come out with the stipulation, come out and try it. You know, and if you like it, you know, great, stick with it. But if you don't like it, by all means, you can quit, and I still feel the same about you. So the kid knows that he can't quit, you know, and I think somehow if he does quit, we can't, you know, hold this against him if he's come out with the team with the understanding that the coach is giving him the chance to try it, and if he doesn't like it, to be able to quit. Because that's what the coach did for me in college when I went out for soccer. That was a stipulation. Well, I'll try it. If I liked it, fine.
But once they select the team, that's the team. And then those rules apply, don't they?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the coach asked him to go out for football and he doesn't like it.
Just try it out.
I mean,
that's not the actual setting
of
the team.
Once they're on the team.
Well,
isn't
in
there
football, there's no cuts.
Yeah.
You know? So you're on the team. You're on the team.
Yeah.
Hasn't there been a mechanism in the past that the kid gone to the coach and said, look, I want to quit, and I go out for soccer instead? The coach would say, fine, I understand your issues,
The process... is, and it's happened since I've been here. We've had some hardships where a kid just can't get through the practice or doesn't like competing at that level, and would like to move on to something else. And they've gone to the football coach.
Channels.
They've gone through the football coach. The coach, listen, this isn't working out for me. I'm not having a good time. I could be spending my time elsewhere doing other things instead of wasting my time here, wasting your time with me. And the coach would come to me and say, listen, this kid's telling me the truth. He's not getting through it. I'd like to let him go in good standing. And I don't have a problem.
So is that in here?
It's crossed out on page 8.
What?
Top of page 8 crossed out.
Yeah, we've got a couple of things to talk about, I guess, in context. You're absolutely right. What was stricken spoke to the opportunity. I guess it speaks to motive more than anything. Under what conditions is dropping a sport acceptable? The stricken out sections makes a plan that says it's acceptable if it's done this way, but it did. But our concerns in the policy itself is it doesn't speak to when it's not acceptable. So we were trying to get at both sides of the issue. How do you explain participation that's an acceptable drop from a participation that's not an acceptable drop, and who calls that? Is it how it's dropped? Is it the manner in which it's dropped? Or is the effect of dropping a sport therefore secondary to the how you do it? And our concern with the coaches is that the how you do it, it does not go without an effect on the team. Permitted or not, it still affects somebody who may, in a cut sport, maybe didn't make the team. only to find out later you're dropping, and now there's that empty slot. If I'd known, you get the picture. Versus being not following a procedure to say I'd like to quit now. So that's the rationale behind it. With your point, though, Earl, perhaps a suggestion to accomplish a little bit of both is to put some kind of time frame.
Yes. How long you
up to a certain time, you can still have that clause of out, but after that certain time, it becomes a drop procedure.
At some point of the first game.
It's got to be before the first game.
It's got to be before the first game of the official game.
That's really the question to
I
be
think
debated.
It should be after the first game.
After the first game. Usually after they've experienced the game situation and game preparation and all that, they won't quit. But I think it ought to be after the first game.
I have a question for
Tom. At what point, sitting on the bench, maybe.
For the football team, for example, at what point in the season when you let them go, does it hurt the team? Have you, like, if you're already in the first game, you've already placed that person, haven't you?
Well, pretty much the kids that come here for a reason, if they're not having a good time or they're not picking up the system, we might have a place, but they're not a starter on the team. But that's kind of usually the way it is with football. I haven't had it happen to me a lot. We have had some hardship cases where some kids have had to leave halfway through the season because they've had to work. We've had some cases where the dad has left, the mom has left, and what are you going to do? No transportation. So if it's not working out for you, we try to make arrangements first to keep them on the team, working our schedule around them or the parents. In a lot of cases, it doesn't work. The kid feels that they need, which is a shame that they need to work in order to support the family. Yeah.
Well, my one concern about going after the, wait until after the first game is if it's a sport where they're limited to the number of players they have and that player leaves after the first game, if you had somebody else interested in it, isn't it too late for them to be picked up on the roster?
You can move them up from a JV sport. Modify. You can always do that.
Somebody could be moved out, but would it be that kid that you preferred to have moved
out?
That's the question.
All of a sudden, you're short one player, and there may have been somebody that got cut that wouldn't have got cut at this time.
Could you not make some sports by a certain thing and other ones better? Like, say, football, it isn't a big thing, but it is for basketball. Could you come up with a list of ones that, at a certain point, you've got to be done by here or you're hurting your team?
I agree with George. I think it's got to keep it simple.
That's what we're trying to do. You can see the complications.
And your cut sports, once you make the team, it's going to be a rare instance, and it's going to be something out of the ordinary where somebody would absolutely have to leave that team.
What is the best thing for the kids? The kid that was going to make a team is like the last one before they cut, and he didn't make it, and then the one that leaves. I mean, what's the best thing to do for the kids? Allow everybody a fair shake.
But in some of those situations, a kid that gets cut will join indoor track or something like that. They'll pick up another sport.
Yeah.
They can get cut and pick up another sport. It's not like...
Yeah. Well, the other point of that is maybe I think where you're going, if a person didn't make it, now there's another opening. Do they get it?
Well, but the problem with
they're
that...
they're already on an indoor track team or to join the tennis team. Or I've seen times where they've left one sport because cross country didn't have enough kids to compete. We couldn't compete in cross country.
I think where she's going is say the person didn't get on their team, but now there's a slot open. Do you play the person that was cut, the last one cut, or don't you?
Well, if you do that and it's after the first game, say, that person, if you brought them on the team, it's going to be halfway, maybe more than halfway through the season before they're eligible to play because they got to have a certain
number of practices required.
They won't take that many, but we got good coaches. Let them make the decision. Our coaches can handle that.
The nice thing about this district is during the fall and the winter, we offer quite a few sports, more than many schools do. And especially during the wintertime, if a kid doesn't make the basketball team, they'll come in and say, Mr. Cook, can I have my yellow slip? I'd like to go to the bowling team now. Yup, I'll tell you, I tell them the process they have to go through, or I didn't make the basketball team, can I go run indoor track? As long as they're doing something, let's get them out there doing it. Same with the soccer season. They didn't make a soccer team, a lot of them run cross country. So we have that, I guess that's the beauty of our system. We have a lot of sports to offer the kids.
Keep it simple.
So that's something we can look at, how to, is there, we could have a cutoff, I guess we could go back, and we, do you have any suggestions?
Is there a point, I know I went to football, and you went during the summer, and we had people that would drop out during the summer because they didn't like it, you know, is there a point where now we're going to have a team or not, and give the kids a choice then, or is it just...
Myself, I think a two-week period would be fine. The kid's going to know whether he likes it or he doesn't by 2 weeks.
You get a two-week free drop, but if you don't want it, you just don't have to do it, and after that, you give a reason. There is a reason, you know.
Well, I think you should still have to give a reason even in 2 weeks.
Any student who joins a team and stays on it for at least 2 weeks is expected to continue on that team for the remainder of the season.
So before 2 weeks, no.
That's it.
We'll do it.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's the 14 selection.
Did somebody write that down?
It's a tape. It's on tape.
It's on tape. Thank goodness
it's
working.
Can I ask a question about dropping
a sport?
I'm probably the only one that doesn't understand this or I'm confused. Throughout here, we use the words contests or events. So, like in letter A, in the bottom of the revised draft, page 7, it says contests or events. Are those used interchangeably? Because then later, and I'm assuming that means like a game, tournament. So they're synonymous?
Contest or event, that would be a game.
So then later, because later we just say one of them.
I think I can respond to that, because when we did that, we meant contests were the actual games, events were the non-league game where you went in and played a group.
Tournament, non-league thing. So, it's not applied to
so that's why we use both language.
But then, and there's some places where we only use the word event. We don't use both. I know at least one place. So I'm just wondering, is it important for other people to know that we mean league and non-league?
Probably not. We probably should go to
just call it
one
contest.
Yeah. I was just telling you why we use the language.
Well, that makes sense.
So with the word contest?
You can do
it. That's fine.
Yeah. Even if it's in a tournament, it's still a contest.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Like under conduct on the same page, it says good behavior in under one, Roman numeral one, both in practice and contest. It just seemed like maybe...
Well, practice and contest is different.
That's what I mean. But it makes it seem like, to me, I thought it was confused, because I thought letter A was more complete. Because this applies to two things, contests and
events,
as opposed to just contests.
Okay. Karen, you have a comment?
I just want to make sure with the insertion of the 2 weeks in our policy, do we still have flexibility for Mr. Cook to be able to take the child who comes to him and says, my family has split and I now have to work? Does he still have that flexibility?
I would hope I would, yeah. I mean, again, it's up to you, but that's something that's kind of out of my control and out of control.
So right, that's what I'm thinking.
I hate to say, no, you want you to finish your season.
Right. I don't think he should be punished or in that kind of circumstance.
I think there's extenuating circumstances.
That may be the right phrase, actually.
Well, we should have a phrase in there.
Under extenuating circumstances, that provision, which was stricken with something about extenuating circumstances, we would unstrike it, if you will. So an athlete who wishes to quit a team, I mean, in its present language, it wasn't terribly helpful. It was implied, but not very helpful if it was to be challenged. As you can see, it read, an athlete who wishes to quit a team but does not plan to join another team that season, what do you do? Well, they're encouraged to talk to the coach and the athletic director. And then what? It becomes the rub. So maybe if it's under extenuating circumstances, and then the test case is what do you mean by extenuating? It's going to have to be a case-by-case basis. Gotcha. We can't get it any finer than
death
that.
Death of an immediate family
member. Yeah, we can't get it any finer than that.
I would just love to have something in the policy. I don't care if it's at the end. It's very similar to a very simple rule in basketball. And there's, in basketball, they take care of a situation that can occur that might only happen one in 1,000 years, but it could happen. And it's called the elastic clause. And what it does, it gives that official at that game the right to make a decision as to whatever happened or came up that happens once in 1,000 years, you have the right to make the decision then and there. And I think the athletic director ought to, if something isn't specifically covered in this policy, should have the authority to make, or and the superintendent, maybe in concert with the superintendent, should have the ability to decide whatever it is, that situation that can come up 1 in 1,000 times. And I think the that should be there somewhere, that they have that power. I think you need it.
That wouldn't be a decision I would make on my own. I would go to probably standing on that.
But you could add that.
But it could take care of any situation like your suggestion. Death in the family. A kid's got to work. A parent's, whatever, died. Or whatever. You know, it gives him the flexibility to make, be able to make a decision.
I mean, you could word it like anything that's not covered specifically under the code of conduct, the superintendent and
The athletic director in consultation with the superintendent.
And consultation can make a final decision.
Can make a final decision.
It's the same thing happens with the president of the board, and we're not meeting. Same basic thing. Somebody has to be able to make a decision until the next meeting.
So we'll compare our results and notes. Which is good. So we could enter that clause on the final page.
You want to call it the elastic?
No.
Call
it basketball. What am I hearing that you're going to enter? Because my opinion would be that the superintendent has the ultimate authority, assuming that they, that everything equal, they have the most direct relationship with the board who is responsible for the policy, and that the athletic director would be in consultation with the superintendent, not that he would be given the superintendent's responsibility.
Right. It is in consultation, is what it will say.
So I'm just asking
you to pause. I understand what you're saying now. It was mentioned that the AD would be in consultation with the superintendent. You're saying it should be the superintendent in consultation with the AD.
I think that's going to depend on the superintendent and how involved he wants to be. I would rather that the AD, who has the most first-hand information, and that the
Can I make a suggestion? I think what's going to happen is in a situation like that, it's probably going to be bounced off me first by the student athlete or the parent.
Or the coach.
Or the coach. And I would make a judgment like that unless I went to the superintendent first and said, what do you think we need to do here? You know, am I sticking my head out too far? You know, so I do think it's going to go through, it's going to get bounced off me first, and I would take it to the superintendent and consult with him as to what we should do.
Still, it's a good point. We need some way to react in real time.
If we put it in the context of the STEM, which is dropping a sport, we're moving to an extenuating circumstance through no purposeful choice would the athlete make this decision, but I have to. That's going to shrink down considerably the people that don't fit the rest of the language. But in the event that there is that athlete who says through extenuating circumstances that are forcing my decision, I'd like to talk to the athletic director and anybody else, and Ed just described it, would ultimately wind up coming to me with it as well. Because our test is going to be, is this an extenuating circumstance? And if it meets, it's pretty dire stuff here, then the rest of the clause doesn't apply. Yep. But the test of that circumstance, the test of that event, if you will, is going to be the athlete, him or herself, who first steps forward and says, through no volition of my own, I am compelled to quit this sport. And I'd like to explain to you why. That, to me, is an extenuating circumstance case.
So if the extenuating circumstance, which we are already adding to the language above, you're saying it would be sufficient to take care of that?
It should be, and the question becomes, to whom do they direct that concern? It could be coach, athletic director, and superintendent. It could be coach and athletic director in consultation with. That part I'm not worried about that part. It's giving the student and his family the due time to say, I've got a real unique thing here that's troublesome enough on its own face value not to be penalized next season also.
Right.
That's what we're trying to protect. With that terminology, that would protect it. I have a troublesome enough situation that's causing me to do what I would not want to do anyway. But please don't let this troublesome situation give me a penalty for my next sport I can participate in. Because the rest of the violation, if you will, speaks to different scenario. You could have played. You chose to say you would, but then you dropped it.
You let us down.
Something's going to... That's what the rest of this speaks to. What do you do when that occurs? Does that make sense?
Yep.
That approach?
I better take it. You tell me I need them.
Okay.
I guess you can probably read the first and second violation. Do you have any questions I can answer?
This is in reference to dropping the sport.
This is for the non-exception person. Now you a willful choice to drop the sport. What should happen? What is the recommendation of what should happen?
Is that just for dropping a sport?
Yes, it's limited.
For any violation of code of conduct.
This section specifically limited to address dropping a sport because it was never addressed before.
Okay. So page 8 should be violations for dropping a sport.
It's on the bottom of page 7 as the lead into it.
Well, that's what I was saying. It didn't make any sense to have it hanging out like that.
Yeah.
But now it's not hanging out. It was attached to something.
Exactly. Keep going.
That's why we said we should just be moving it.
Why all that side of the
house? I know. We're getting. Got it? It rolls into now specifically dropping the sport. Here's the stuff.
They're eliminating all that stuff.
Because that's all coming out now. Right. I see.
That's
it.
So,
in the context again of a sport is now dropped, not a willful choice, but not because of extenuating circumstances, what do we want to, what is the policy to say is know this student athlete before you make this decision? That in choosing to drop the sport, you incur for this decision some. A penalty that affects your future.
Oh, not now, obviously, because if you quit the sport,
you're not in it.
You're not
right.
Living
it. And that clause, not to go through all of that again, but the idea is, what is the restriction? Is there a concept to be assigned to a student to not keep doing that because of the effect, not that any one person would do it, but that many could do it over the course of their career? What's the effect it has on the other teammates? What's the effect it has on the selection of who makes teams, who gets cut from teams? There should be some signal, and that was what we were trying to accomplish, signaling to the student athlete, this decision does not come casually. And it carries with it an understanding that if you do it, be prepared that it affects your next activity. And we've tried to be fair on how much.
I'm sorry, a little policy all day, so I'm like, what are we going to notify the parents and guardians in writing about?
Go ahead.
Well, what we've done in the past is the day of they quit, they come, we notify them that you're sitting 25% for the next sport season. A letter goes out to the parents stating that they quit a sport. I sign it.
Such a day.
They quit, and it goes out to them the very next day.
So you can you write in there a notification of parents and guardians of policy or whatever? Because I just didn't know what you meant you were
going to
write in. I mean, you know, but I
didn't
know.
Well,
basically,
you're going to write 2, 3, 4.
It could be a notification of the parents and guardians in writing that the student has quit the sport.
And
these are
the consequences.
And the following.
And this just expands what we had above, which...
Right.
Pretty didn't say it didn't really
didn't give the penalty.
Right, right. Never did go anywhere.
Yeah, but you know when you write it, like you just know it, and then when somebody reads it, they
yeah.
Get it and
then
quit.
Right.
A lot of times you change the wording after that.
Are we still going to have something in here that the student has to speak to the coach and the AD,
or the procedure of how you would do it properly?
Well. I'm talking about in this instant here, you know, the student didn't want to quit the sport.
Stretching the taffy.
But
the coach was picking on him. He perceived the coach was picking on him. She can, you know, three girls said the coach never plays us. She always makes us sit the bench. We're fed up with it. The AD says, well, go talk to the coach. And the student says, we can't talk to the coach. She won't listen to us. We tried it. So what's going to happen when it comes to the AD
and
they say, we tried to talk to the coach, nothing helped?
Are we trying to make the children responsible to face
the
conflict?
I know
what you're saying. To confront the coach and just...
Yeah, but something's there's a breakdown in communication. Maybe it's not all the kids' fault I'm coming at here.
So you're now expanding the definition of extenuating circumstance. That's
okay.
What you're doing.
That's what it would be.
I think, because there can be any number of items that go under that category, which is what we're trying to avoid having to be interpreting it every time a new one came
right.
up.
Right, and if we stay with the two-week window, after the 2 weeks, right, if they quit,
they're
25%.
They're into this.
Right.
I think, can we put something in writing that,
so the
if we give them a two-week window that this doesn't apply the first 2 weeks?
Even after 2 weeks? No, we don't want that.
No,
that's it. There's no getting around it. Unless you expand extenuating circumstances to mean maybe this, then you can quit. Well, it's stretching the taffy out. At what point do we stop stretching it and say you made a decision?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll say it.
In the statement that...
But sooner or later, there'll be a team that rebels against the school.
That's
going to
be in the division.
Okay. We'll handle that tomorrow.
That's very possible.
Jeff just brought up, I think, a good point. Under first violation, this is notification of parents and guardians in writing. And number two says suspension from the team for 25% of the next sports season. It would be the athlete's next sports season, right?
That's correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not
like football or basketball.
No, it's a next sport.
It's not the cumulative sport. It's when he or she
participates. When he or she participates.
Correct. It could be next year. Exactly.
I think we probably skipped this because we caught that on the major one. I know you're going to see it worded athlete season.
It does say that in
season.
Which the student participates.
Which is a good thing, though, because that way, if you know that's the reading, then you would play another sport so that you wouldn't take the hit in the sport you really want to play. So you would be right. More active.
See, the next clause picks that
it
up,
does
I think.
Say in which
yeah.
the
it says it does.
Yeah, it does.
So you play another sport in between that takes care of it.
I thought we caught it, but when you said it, I was wondering. So
yeah.
We're okay.
Actually, it could blow into the fall.
So it could carry over to summer. In other words,
if you quit the fall,
let's say you quit baseball, it would carry over to your football season next year.
No, I thought it was just fall, spring.
That's been the hang up with some
next
of my coaches.
Season
coaches just hit
in
a hit
which
head. My coaches are saying, well, geez, if a kid quits a sport in the spring, like, for example, my baseball coaches, he's been harping on me for 2 years, is I got a kid that quits in the spring, but I see him out for football next year. He's got a point. You know, when you can quit during the fall, you know, and you might not play a sport. If you play soccer, but you don't play basketball or baseball, and you play football, school season ends. I don't play another sport during the season. I can go back and play football again. So, yeah, you hit it right on the head.
So it should carry on. It does now.
Yeah,
it carries on.
Yeah, we just didn't read far enough.
Yep,
carries on. No matter when it is, he's going to be... He participates, so what it will do, it will make you want to play
the
another
sport
in between.
Yes, I'm
saying. So instead of next year, Wayne did not be able to play football.
Yeah.
You play basketball or something.
Gotta
take the penalty there,
yeah.
Rather than taking it the next one.
Yeah.
So it would increase participation, I think.
We skipped down to number two, section more violations. From notification of parents, 50% of the next sports season. You lose your captain's awards, your athletic awards.
By captain's honors, that means you never can be a captain in any sport?
For the next sports season.
Just the next sports season.
For the next sports season you play.
Okay, lots of captain honors for next
that means
sports
a junior
season.
A junior
in which you participate
for his senior year.
In which you participate.
Sorry,
but I think that should be listed.
A junior that
season,
violates
so they can't
in
say
the spring
it,
would lose it,
forever.
Or in a second violation for his senior year.
If they played a fall sport, they would.
Okay.
But if they played a winter or a spring sport, they could retain those honors again.
Okay.
I have one question. Do the students pick the captains or the coaches?
Depends on the team.
It varies, but for the most part, the coaches sign the captains.
We usually vote, actually.
My only question was, you know, I don't have a problem. It just seems to me that if the students are picking the captain, and I'm not arguing, but you just think, well, then they should make a decision. But I know you can't.
I would hope my coaches pick the captain.
Yeah. But you know, they pick them, but then they're knocked out for a violation. There's nothing they can do about that.
Right. Quite frankly, the designation of being viewed as a captain should have for the student who is captain and quits the knowledge that it affects the entire team, not just my decision.
You got a pattern going.
And I think if you look at number four underneath second more violations, the second violation, again, it reoccurs. If you get a kid that quits again, they go through the same, and I don't know why you would do that. You sell 50% of the next season, go through the same process again if you know it's redundant. So we would hope that would prevent a student athlete from doing that. And when you quit, there is no appeals process. It doesn't go, you quit after 2 weeks, we're going to put that in there, you quit. You're not going to be able to think that the superintendent is cut and dry right there in front of you. Unless it's an extenuating circumstance and they come to me.
But they're covered before. For 2 weeks, they're all right.
And that's
as long as that's in there, then we're covered.
That's at second or more violations. Yep. What are we appealing?
Right.
Twice, three times, four right. times.
Yep. I think it's important to give them 2 weeks. If they can quit for any reason they want, then we give them the chance.
Okay, bottom of page 8 of 11, other major violations. And this is, I guess when we look at other major violations, I believe the parent hit on it last time. They were talking about drug and alcohol abuse, things of that nature. These would be considered a major violation.
What page are we on?
Starting
you're jumping to 9 over on the
right.
Right. Tell me exactly where we are. We're on the top of the revised copy, page 9.
Yep.
Yes.
There's in the blue is the new numbering.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Karen, you have a question?
I just wondered why at that point, Ed, we would be dropping notification of parents, guardians, mm-hmm. and writing, unless I just forgotten something.
I know.
In the bottom of page 8, and then
under major,
it says under first violations, then you go to the next page, and you've taken out notification of parents, guardians, and writing.
Oh, maybe that's from the good pickup. Yeah, you took it out.
Are we okay?
No.
We should still be notifying.
Don't know why.
If it's a major one, we should be telling them.
May have been just an error to edit it. I the logic.
I don't think you should tell parents everything. Why not?
Right.
There's some stuff.
But they can be notified of a decision. That's good. That's right.
That should have been left, I believe.
Yep. We will uncross it. Is that the right term? Unstrike it?
Keep.
So then,
keep.
Actually, that would keep. That would stay one and two.
Correct.
And therefore, it changes the numbering system.
Right.
Back to the way it was.
2, 3, 4. Yeah, but it's got some changes to it.
Yeah.
But the numbering would go back.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm just going to ask a question. I think I understand, but I want to ask it.
Sure.
And I realize these are major violations we're talking about. But if there are, let's say, 3 games left in the season, and if the student's going to lose 25%, and let's pretend there's 12 games in the season, they lose 3. So that means they lose the full 3 remaining. It's based on the whole season, not what's remaining to be played.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Is that
that's
it?
Yeah,
that's where
you lose it, right.
I really feel stupid for saying this, but what if when you say major violation, is there like a list, or am I supposed to just know? It's anything.
Thank you for asking that question.
What?
Thank you for asking that question.
Oh, you didn't know either.
Tobacco, alcohol, and drug philosophy.
I think when we look at major violations, we're talking about
code of conduct with major violations.
Yes, that's where I was going. I was just asking.
I'm sorry.
The question is there a listing, you know, what's the shopping cart for major violations?
Right.
The code of conduct for the district spells out a lot of these particulars that satisfy in the handbook. This is the athletic code referencing major violation.
Back to the code of conduct.
Right. Right. So we could copy and paste, or we could keep the reference knowing there. This is the major cheating would be considered.
See, if I was a kid, I'd get copy that list out, and I'd say, what I did is not on that list for major.
Well, you know, when the Safe School Act was first passed by New York State Education Department, that was one of the provisions that they articulated. One of the reasons why the code of conduct for a district should be reviewed annually is because extenuating circumstances, no pun intended, come up as different individuals become more creative and ingenious, finding things that I can do and aren't on the list.
Right.
So they said, well, if you're troubled by, I won't go into, no, I won't, it won't work. But if you're troubled by this being considered an inappropriate dress, I mean, literally, the codes of conduct spell out what inappropriate is. And the courts have consistently maintained it's okay for your interpretation and your policy, short of it being a violation of First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, expression, etc., for you to articulate what is appropriate and
so
what isn't.
So we're covered in our handbook.
Yeah.
Got everything we need.
Should that be referred, though?
Violations as referred to in the student
reference code of conduct? Sure.
I think the reference should be stated.
So you can reference back to, I mean, you don't have to list it, but
no,
you can
just
reference back to
it. Save time and space.
Yep.
Yes, Jeff.
Doing a major punishment like drugs, shouldn't that carry more of a punishment than just 25% of the games? Because that's the same as just cleaving support. Well, drugs is like, it's like a federal offense, so it should be a little higher than just 25%.
Well, if you're doing drugs, you're going to be suspended, probably. And
period.
That's covered under suspension.
Right.
If you're suspended...
It's a great question. To know, to have the comfort of knowing as a student athlete that... on a violation involving substance abuse makes all of these things minor in terms of the consequence facing you as a substance abuser in school premises.
Yes. Yes.
Correct.
But is that only if you get convicted?
No.
It doesn't.
The school district's approach for counseling and providing a punishment for an admitted violation of the substance and or alcohol policy is independent of what the courts may decide to do with that same event. Some things that are not chargeable because of a student's age are still a concern to our district. And the courts don't articulate to a school district how harsh or lenient you should be. They only say if the child is of a certain age, we have our own set of rules, regardless of how harsh or lenient you have been.
Okay, but if the kid beats a rap in court because an arresting officer doesn't show up or whatever they do to get out of it, can they say, look, I wasn't convicted, so I'm not guilty? Do they still
To my knowledge, it hasn't happened yet, but it's possible that a law guardian or parent would say it never happened. According to the court, there was no penalty assigned for the allegation. And it comes down to, by that point, and this is much more than you probably wanted to know, but at that point, the punishment assigned for the violation as a school violation is probably half to three quarters already completed by the time the courts get to decide did it happen or didn't it happen.
Because we don't wait until the court decides.
And we can't give the days back.
Right.
You know.
Okay. Right.
See in the summer school or
something. You'd say, whoops.
Did they treat drugs? I'm talking like illegal drugs, marijuana, or prescription drug abuse, the same as they do alcohol. In other words, are they treated the same in the school?
In the school?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And alcohol abuse off campus, like at a party, is treated. The
impact it has on a student athlete for being in the presence of alcohol at a party, it speaks to what we do with you as a student athlete. But your presence or use of it on school property speaks to a serious violation of, and that that changes everything. That changes, makes the other issues a moot point, because there will be hefty suspension involved.
Really good discussion.
Yes.
Very good school. Can I?
Sure.
Can we keep asking questions? I guess I think we're ready to move on to this. It talks about a counselor.
Yes.
Yep.
Determining the number of sessions in a chemical dependence program. I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I guess I would have to be assured that all four of our, if this is high school, primarily middle school counselors too.
No, these are not. These are drug counselors. This is Mr. Manning.
It says the counselors. So I don't know if it's like the child's high school counselor, because I would like to feel assured that all four of them are equally qualified to make that determination. I'm not so sure if it's them or the psychologist. And secondly, what do we have another policy that covers and protects the child's confidentiality about them entering a program, because they may, you know, fill out an application for work? Have you ever been in a chemical blah, 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 blah? What do they do about that? I mean,
right.
There's a lot of different things about that.
Right.
And then is their record expunged when they graduate?
It says that if attendance at a chemical dependence program is warranted, so if we send them to someplace, that counselor says how long they got to go.
No, well, it doesn't say that.
It's what it says at a chemical dependence program. We don't have one.
But you don't have to be inpatient. You can be.
No, I understand that. But saying to the counselor, so it would have to be.
It doesn't say what counselor.
Let me describe the practice, okay. And then we can and see if the language doesn't match the practice. We want it to match. That's a really good question. The practice now would be if a student is in fact has admitted to use, illegal possession, selling, etc., a substance, be it alcohol or a drug, they would immediately be subject to out-of-school suspension for the offense as it was identified, but required to attend a superintendent's hearing. At the hearing, they have an opportunity for counsel, cross-examine people. If it's a second person said this is what happened and everything hinges on this person saying it, they have an opportunity to say, I'd like to have my accuser, for all intents and purposes, speak to how they know I did this because I've told you I didn't. That procedure is all laid out in the superintendent's hearing. The outcome of that conversation brings us to your point on the counselor. What we currently do, presently do, is take advantage of the services that we have in district from CVS with a drug and substance abuse expert, if you will, who will then takes our list of who's involved in school suspension. For the reason we provide, that's where the confidentiality has to be stretched, so they at least know why they're talking to the student they're talking to. But beyond that, that individual has absolutely no conversation with the board member, with me, with the principal, with the parents, quite frankly. It's a conversation that is held entirely between the counselor and the student.
Or the guidance counselor.
And the amount, well, presently it's limited to the substance issue, it's limited to the outside counselor.
That's good, because correct. They're the expert. Right.
That's that's what it's trying to acknowledge that that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Steps.
Yeah.
So we can just refer the other document that states that. I'm sure there's a policy.
The CVES counselor will determine the number of sessions.
Is it drug abuse counselor, whatever it is? Is that what they call
chemical.
It?
Chemical dependence.
Yeah, I can't say why it wasn't CVES to begin with, other than it's a policy that is limited. The policy should leave the door open to it. If you don't do it through CVS, you're still going to do it. That's the only reason for not
putting
it.
But the beginning of the paragraph starts off the guidance counselor. And we want to change it to be the drug enforcement counselor, or whatever its title is. Because the academic counselor probably isn't
the
best.
Two different counselors in the same paragraph.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's it. And if we want to clear it up, we should. Well, we should do that.
Is it still the law that the most you can suspend the kid for is 5 days? Well, then I think, again, the 25% is not enough. The kid is selling drugs in the school, and he's a member of your basketball team, and he's only going to be suspended for 1 week. He's going to miss possibly 2 games. And according to the policy, if he's got 16 games, he's only going to miss 2 others. I don't think that's enough.
No. You'll go back to your first part of your question, because therein is where the why in the road starts. Is it true that the student can only be suspended for 5 days? 5 days without there being a formal hearing. If at the result of the hearing is that there's no additional reasons to suspend beyond that, meaning the allegation for 5 days hasn't risen to the level of an illegal substance. It's risen to the level of something, but it hasn't risen to the level of an illegal activity, substance, alcohol, etc. Then the individual is like in any part of society, you have done your punishment for the asserted violation, 5 days fit, it's over. But my point of talking about the superintendent's hearing is that I really can say this, so far, I've yet to have an individual who has been in violation of the alcohol or substance abuse policy that after 5 days, there wasn't more to assign.
So then they go into how
there's
a school
pretty
suspension.
Strong, exactly. Right. There's a pretty strong reason why 5 days was assigned. It can right. happen, but okay.
it's 5 days.
Hasn't happened yet.
But extended with the superintendents.
Yeah. The law doesn't limit it to 5 days. It says you can't hold, using very rough vernacular for a minute, you can't hold someone for an indeterminate period of time before you say, I guess we were wrong. So it builds in that 5 day period to say you got to gather people around the table, legal guardian, cross examine other people. You have to bring people to the bear to say, were we wrong or were we not wrong on what you were charged with.
So when the student comes back, is that when the 25% starts, or does it start when you're gone?
That was going to be my next question.
Actually, the way it's worded right now, the one eats up the 25, yeah. unless you do something with it. Now that you have been allegedly found guilty of the infraction that had you suspended for an extended period of time, literally semesters, sometimes more, when you come back, do we also say welcome back and now impose 25% more penalty on you? That's the question at the on the table.
I would say yes, because the way an athlete looks at this right now, he's getting the same way as he reads it. He's getting the same penalty as a kid who dropped a sport, 25%. I would like to see it as 25% starts when the day he comes back to school. That's why I'd like to see it myself.
That's a higher penalty.
So it's following a served out of school suspension period.
Right.
The other provision still kicks in.
So
that's for a major violation.
For a major
violation.
Under this.
So then I have to ask, if they're not suspended right away, it goes a few days, they're still allowed to play. When does my notification and writing go out to the parents? It's supposed to happen immediately once we recognize that they are going to be suspended. My letter goes out. Like, say I have to suspend them on a Tuesday, and you're not going to give them OSS until the following Monday, or however it may work.
Oh, it doesn't happen that. It goes much quicker.
It goes well.
Oh, yeah. The chain of the sequence would be, following it literally, infraction occurs within the day, no later than the next morning.
Okay. So
depending on when it happened, the day before could be the next morning. If it happened in the morning, it's going to be resolved by the afternoon,
so
a letter would be generated at that point.
My letter would go out that day they would be suspended 5 days.
Effective that very next day.
Now they're suspended. They can't do anything. But when they come back, now they start serving the punishment for the code of conduct.
That's what's being discussed.
Right.
Yeah. For major violations.
I think that's fair.
But if they have out of school suspension for typically it's 3 months or more?
It can be.
So then it's a kind
it basically,
of a,
that was my point. It eats up the sport, and do you, when they are finally done
question.
With that,
yeah,
do you start again?
It doesn't always eat up the sport.
It may not. No.
That's the question.
But he does make a good point, though. Quitting a sport and drugs, I mean, there should be something there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what opened our eyes at the last meeting was when this all came about.
Yeah. But to me, there has to
be. Can be that. Can certainly do it.
Major violation, you should. Back when I played, major violation, you were history. Period. Yeah. Goodbye. At MEI, you were done for the year. Don't even bother to go out for basketball. You were done.
Do we, it's something that we didn't talk about, and it just came, I'm sorry, it came to mind when we talked about counseling services. Even for minor violations, because we're all about, we should be anyway, helping kids that we see
heading down a way that maybe we don't want. And, you know, is there, do we have the right to enforce or strongly recommend counseling for these children?
Yes.
Before they get to this point?
Yes. Yeah.
Have we covered that in any other policy?
I'm going to speak for the counselors on this piece and the principals for a moment, but when a violation let's suppose the youngster, I'll put it in the setting, suppose the youngster has an anger management issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Blows up repeatedly. We now have a pattern that says, well, this happened the first week of school, it's happened the third week of school, it's happened the fifth week of school. There are penalties for each of those separate items, but it's also incumbent upon us to say, you got an issue, and we need to get you some assistance through the guidance counselor. Help is different. I don't know how to answer help. Afforded.
Does that happen, is what I mean.
Yeah, it's afforded. The question is whether it's effective when after it's been afforded. That is a case-by-case basis. It really is.
So every kid who seems to be having problems, heading toward a major violation maybe, the coach or somebody always identifies that to the counseling department? I can't imagine that happening.
Usually, Kathleen, the coach is the last one to find out and to know.
Well,
we're the last.
I'm speaking in the...
Yeah. You mean about behaviors that happen in school?
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about...
behaviors that happen out of the sports.
Yeah. You know, like the partying and stuff that goes on after football games and
no,
stuff.
No, I'm talking
the
about...
Coaches are the last one to hear about.
Behaviors in school to keep kids from getting to this point.
I think, for the most part, maybe not just in Eagletown, but across the board in all high schools, the kids that play high school athletics are pretty good kids, very good kids. Yes, we do have some. I know from the time I've been here, from what was before, the counselors that are here now, not the guidance counselors, the counselors that were, I believe, are out of BOCES, we do have student athletes who see them every day that have that. And they do a nice job. But as far as, do we recognize every student athlete that's getting to that boiling point or is going to hit that or is going to redline? I don't know how we could, to be honest.
What we do have just which speaks I think pretty directly to a service that's made available is that certainly at the high school I can speak more affirmatively of this, there is a standing group of all of the of teachers, counselors, nurses, psychologists, principals, parole, you name every service group you can think of that gathers regularly to talk about kids that have them concerned. And they're at one level of concern or another level of concern, but they speak to that population to figure out what could somebody say or do that is not seemingly working when you're the only one saying it.
So all the staff know about that group?
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, the staff appointments are made annually by the principal, and then the group assembles regularly to have that conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Moving on to page 10 and 11, this is the one that was probably the hardest for me. The third major violation. In the past, on number two, you can see where suspension participation in inter-squad athletics, you're suspended for your remaining years at Eagletown Central School District. And it was hard because I just went through, I spoke in front of the board at the beginning of the year about how our code of conduct in this third violation, you're suspended for your entire school year. It's a great deterrent for the kids, and we've never had a third violated. I went back, I looked at three kids in the past. I talked to some of the coaches about them, and without saying their names, all three of them had two violations. They were all second-time offenders. We lost one. She just gave up. She quit on her own. And to me, that was... I don't know if she read the writing on the wall or what. I don't know her that well, but I talked to her coach, and after her second violation, she threw her hands in the air and just gave up on it. The other two gentlemen that were two-time offenders turned out in their junior and senior years to be really, really good kids. They became gentlemen. They matured a lot. So I looked at that. I kind of thought, if a kid screws up twice their ninth grade year and they're still not matured enough, and also in their 10th grade year they get in a fight or school or they get caught, they should get caught something, and they're 10th grade, and we have to bang them from their 10th grade year all the way to their senior year. They're not allowed to do anything anymore. And when they become a junior, they really start to mature, and they become good citizens, good kids. But now we told them, you know, we've nailed you. You're not allowed to come out for sports anymore. So I don't know if we're trying to push them back to where they came from, maybe doing drugs or alcoholism, or maybe suspending them for 1 year and the third violation for one calendar year. We're still leaving that door open for them. If they want, they can come back and participate again. I don't know. It was kind of a catch 22, but it's, you know, when you're, I mean, even now, I mean, you know, with me sometimes, you know, I don't make the right decisions all the time. I'm not in 9th and 10th grade anymore, but that's a tough year for kids. 8th, 9th, 10th grade, they make mistakes. They do dumb things.
I think you're using them.
You know, and by the time they're a junior, like these two boys, we were able to keep around after two violations. They became really good kids. One I do know, the other one I spoke to the coach about. And the girl that's still in school, we lost her. Even with two violations, she's just given up on it. And it's a shame because she's a really good athlete. So when I talked to Mr. Amo about this, and again, I can't take credit for this because he, you know, he bounced it off into a, we decided a third major violation at one calendar year for the date of suspension would be sufficient without nailing them for the remaining years of beating.
So if it's a suspension and a fall sport, it would go up to the end of the following year of the small sport, so they'd pick up the large sport. They could be.
Correct.
Calendar year.
Calendar year, yeah.
Is that third violation?
Third violation.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
And again, I think that's
reasonable.
Yeah,
you give them hope at the end.
And I like
we
hope.
Left the door open for them. We, you know, they can put their foot back in the door and maybe get a fresh start. But boy, if we, you know, and I went back and forth about this. We bang a kid when they're a ninth grader, a tenth grader, and they've got nothing to do for 2 or 3 years. You know, are we telling them to go back to drinking and drugging? I don't have the answer for it. But in my opinion, if we can leave that door open so they get their foot back in it, we've got some great coaches here that can pull them through and say, listen, let's get a fresh start here. Like I said, those two boys, the one that I do know, they turned out to be a pretty good kid, pretty good boy. So,
Myself, Eddie, I like it because you're dangling the carrot still in front of the kid. He's still got something to look forward to. The door isn't completely closed on him yet. It's a pretty severe penalty. And if you're going to err, I'd rather err on the side of the kid myself. I like it. I like basically what you got right there.
Well, like I said, it's not just me.
Well, the second and third.
And so, a little bit further in the list, you'll see we've still created an appeals process.
Right. And that was the next big change. And if you don't mind, Mr. Ingle, I'd like to kind of let you talk about that. That was
sure.
Something that he brought to my attention. It's cut and dry. And it took the board member and the parent off the committee, which, you know, it's, when I went through last year, it is a pressure situation for people to be in, especially if you bring a parent and it's got to decide the kid's fate, and they got to go back out in the community, and people are, you know, casting stones and things of that nature. So what Mr. Amos proposed, I think it's very cut and dry. It's pretty simple, and it gets to the point. So
yep, the appeals process is attempting to accomplish three distinct things. One is to continually think about, even with violations and infractions and penalties, is it still possible that extenuating circumstances could affect what would otherwise be the next thing to do? In the case of a third violation, the next thing is a full calendar year. So, at the request, this appeal process then says, well, let's create an opportunity, but it's going to be driven entirely on the behalf of the student. He or she has to do the work to step forward for the appeal. This isn't call me when my appeal is going to be held. This is you do the work to plead your case. You want an appeal. And these steps speak to that. But that's one point. The second point is the appeals process should be different depending upon the nature of the offense. Minor, quote, what we were calling minor offenses don't carry with them appeals. Multiple offenses now bring in the picture of, well, what would you want us to know that may be an extenuating circumstance that's escaped us? Let's create an appeals team that's an independent review team which has some teaching in it, some growing up in it, some mentoring in it, and some advocacy in it. And so the appeals committee that is presented to you is an attempt to accomplish that. And then the third piece is after how many, after I've exhausted as a student athlete, my efforts to say, yeah, but you don't understand. And I've asked everybody I can possibly have enter into this conversation, and their answer is, yeah, but we do understand. You're not accepting. There's a difference. Then it should stop. It should have an end to it as well. So the appeals process is attempting to accomplish all those three things. As you can see, and you can certainly read it along, in the first event, a student who's been assessed a suspension has the right to appeal. It verifies you can do it. The second step involves, for first-time offenders, or if you've been suspended for 25% of a sports season, the appeal is made directly to the superintendent only. There's no appeals team. There is the student pleading a case for 25% violation. And that's it. The C expels out what I'll do with that, or how I'll proceed with that. The superintendent will listen to the appeal and make his or her decision based on the information received. I may call on anyone else involved who may have information in helping make that determination. This is on the appeal, mind you. The suspension's already been assigned. The question is, oh, but that's not right. It shouldn't be. Okay, tell me why it shouldn't be. Step forward and lay out your case. The suspended student may present his or her own case or call upon another adult to make the presentation for them. This is the advocacy part. Yeah, but Mr. Amo, you don't understand. I'm this child's teacher, and there is really something you should know that might affect your 25% penalty, and I'm willing to give up my time to come and speak on behalf of the student. Fine. The appeals process would allow that to occur. The third, the letter D, in cases involving a second or third time offender, other than dropping a sport, you can see why we spent so much time on dropping a sport earlier, because this wouldn't apply. We already have the rules for dropping the sport. There's no appeals for that process. It's pretty cut and dry. But if you're a second or third time offender, the superintendent will form a violation review committee to listen to and determine the outcome of the appeal. You see the members listed there. They'd be a standing committee, George's question earlier, and they would be asked to be people to serve. Who would be the minimum membership? What would be the minimum membership? It'd be the superintendent, director of athletics, an assistant principal, coach or advisor, and two faculty members. And who could also be invited? If requested by the student, no more than two other advocates that he or she designates to come and speak on their behalf. Now, why do we want the two faculty members there? Because if you're willing to serve on a committee to hear an appeal of this student, you're going to be there to advocate for something. If you can't find two faculty members who will be there to speak on your behalf, you've basically said this is not an appeal that's worth defending. Hence the advocacy and the teaching part of it. So we're trying to get more people involved who have knowledge of the student as a student, but not shift it so far to the, it doesn't matter the student, but also not disregard, but we have code for a reason. We want you to aspire to a standard of behavior regardless of who you are. So it's trying to accomplish both sides of that issue. And then the appeals process, it's very simple, as you can see the rest of it.
I missed something here.
Yep.
The two faculty members, so are they named in advance, or are they standing members of that committee, or are they picked?
Those two
are different than
very
the
good
advocate.
Question. Those two faculty members would be requested, or I shouldn't say, the two faculty members can be would be individuals who just so chose to be the reps. No, it will be faculty
so
member reps. The chances
advocates at somebody else.
Right.
Okay.
There. And what I didn't write in here, and it could happen, quite frankly, is would it be possible that the faculty person saying, I have another faculty member who would respectfully requested to serve instead of me, and would that be okay? I'd probably say yes. The point is there's a reason you want to be there for this review. And my experiences have been both sides. Sometimes the faculty rep is there to be certain that the code, in fact, is adhered to. Sometimes the faculty rep is there to say, yeah, but there's some things you don't know, and I'd like to advocate for this child because of that reason. Yeah. So, again, trying to find that balance of fairness, if you will. On the final page, Step E would then, the appeals committee would hear the evidence as presented by the student and any advocates. The advocates may include, but are not limited to, and you can see the list of the folks they could involve. The next letter, F, the committee will attempt to reach consensus in making a determination on the appeal. Remember, the offense and the charge and the consequence have already been assigned. This is simply, does it get overturned in any way? And it's going to require this group coming to a pretty strong consensus. Yes, it should be overturned, and here's how. And what we wanted to do with the review, or no, there's not enough of a consensus to overturn it, it stands. What we wanted to build, what it wanted to build into that letter G is that the student will submit to any additional conditions and or penalties for reinstatement as deemed appropriate by that review team. So translation, all right, you convinced us that there's a reason for you to be allowed to do it, but I tell you what, now we get back to your counseling question. In order for this to happen, you will first of all going to miss the time you already know you're missing. But you may get an early entrance back into this sequence, provided you can show that you've made appointments with counselors, you've never missed a date, you have done X, you have done Y, you've done Z. You are submitting your reports on a quarter, on a regular basis for your counselor to give. We can write any condition you want in there as a condition to be reconsidered for reinstatement as a student athlete.
Last clause.
Yeah, last clause. That's where it would come in. For the second, third time offender. And then there is no appeal process available once that committee has rendered its decision. It becomes, it's done at that point.
The appeal committee will attempt to reach consensus in making a determination on the appeal. In the absence of consensus, majority rule among the committee will determine the outcome. I counted 8. That gives you an even number. Right? Superintendent 1, 2, 3, 4.
Maybe superintendent would vote case for time.
That could easily be, that's basically what I've done. I mean, I kind of chair it, I facilitate it, I pose the questions, but and you're right, if the number doesn't, if it mathematically we can't get majority, then we should reflect that in the absence of a consensus, the superintendent will determine the outcome of the appeal. I'm comfortable with that.
Yes, sir. Not to throw a wrench in the works, but and this is good. I like this. This yeah. Sounds excellent to me the way it goes, but the last time we did this, I believe we ran into a problem with something like this because we had set a board policy back here on, let's say, alcohol. And it was a cut and dry board policy. And then at the end of this, you were allowing a committee to overturn your policy. That's where we ran into a big wall the last time we did this.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember that now.
All right.
But don't get me wrong, I like this.
No? Should it apply to...
Well, I was going to say, technically, you're looking at if the student broke the policy.
Right.
Not right? I mean, you're right. Not overturning the policy. You're looking at if the student...
Break the policy. And
right, but...
Extenuating
certain. But some of this is saying that they can change the... Say, our punishment is for a first offense 25%. Or the second offense, 50%, this committee can come over and upon hearing this, we'll submit to any additional conditions or penalties. But we've already set those in a policy. We talked about this for hours. And I don't remember if this was a consensus among us while we switched this or if this actually went to school boards and they said...
No, that was a consensus.
Okay, and I think it was Doug that was really trying to set us straight on that, and maybe that wasn't the proper way.
I only had a half a beer, and everybody else said I drank a full case. Well, wouldn't that be kind of like...
Well, they still broke
the violation.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. The violation is a violation which calls for a specific penalty in the policy. Oh. So, but then at the end of this, we're saying that this committee can overturn that policy and come up with their own.
No.
You don't think it is?
Well, I think basically we're just this committee is just ensuring that everything was followed according to the way it should be.
That's one of their functions.
Right.
I agree with that.
I mean, that everything was, that all the dots were crossed and, you know, whatever. And basically, if that's the case, you really can't come to another, other than the decision that was already made. But if they screwed up, right, I mean, if they made mistakes in that process, that's when you could overturn it. Kind of like a court hearing.
Or if the kids were mocked.
Yeah, it's an appeal. It's an appeal. It's an appeal to the court decision.
Karen?
When I looked at this also, I was thinking it gave the opportunity to these people that, let's pretend I'm a student who finally realizes everything that's happened to me maybe is because my parents might have split up, and I get the feeling, rightly or wrongly, that I'm really not wanted by this parent or that parent, and I react to that. This, in my opinion, gives the staff the ability to say, you need some help in anger management. If you do this, then you will be allowed to serve X number of percentages of games. You have to be out, but we'll let you go back in. Am I understanding correctly?
That's the instruction part of an appeals process, is are there circumstances, when we beat the term already to death, but it's really extenuating. Are there reasons about family conditions? Are there reasons that are out of control, quote-unquote, of the student to be able to make this promise that I know I can't keep alone? But I really am trying to keep it. I just can't keep it. In the case of a substance issue, that's what we'd be talking about. A student who's incapable of being able to honor, however their best intentions are. The question becomes, what do you do from an instruction point of view, not so much anymore from a penalty point of view, to say we hear you and you've got to do some things now, you just have to do this, and or directing the family. This reinstatement means you have some things to do.
Frank?
Under E, the way it reads, advocates may include but not limited to athletic parents. I mean, you want the athlete's parents here. You don't want athletic parents, right?
Yeah. The athletes. You're right.
We already fixed that one.
Stan, I don't have a question.
Can you be a real athletic?
Okay.
Hold you up for the legislature.
And I'll come back to you.
It's not a question, though.
Go ahead, Renal. I'll reformulate the question.
In the very beginning, we did spend a lot of time on it. We talked about the athletic director distributes student-athlete rosters to the faculty and principals within a week of the team formation, right? So that's telling me that's when we start all this. So I'm to assume that, like, the code of conduct is not always signed by the athlete until even 2 weeks after they start practice, or sometimes the week after they start practice. So once your name's on the roster, these things apply to you, whether or not you've signed the code of conduct.
We added to that the 2 week grace period.
Quit within 2 weeks, we'll have to do anything.
Well, but if you don't quit, whether or not you sign the code of conduct, if your name is on the roster, unless you quit, this applies to you, whether or not you've signed the athletic code of conduct.
Can you be on the roster without having signed
the
code?
Can't be on the team if you don't sign it.
It says within a week of team formation. They don't all sign.
I get what you're saying.
They don't all sign the code of conduct within a week of being put on the team. No way.
We just got ours. Yes, you guys are.
I can tell you.
They were handed out to parents.
Some of the tryouts are, some of the coaches extended tryouts, maybe 4 or 5 days, or some may have 3. And then the parent meeting, which is where the coaches set out the code of conduct for the most part, the parent meeting might be a couple days after that, a few days after that, and then I'll get other code of conducts back. So, yeah, the kid could be, the child, the student could be practicing. They could make the team after 3 days, they could be practicing for 2 or 3 days, and still not have that code of conduct signed.
Now,
when does this start? That is a question.
Oh,
I'm
wait
sorry.
A minute. You promised.
I want to use mine.
Now, because you know there's going to be a situation where a kid's going to say, hey, I didn't sign that yet. Didn't apply to me.
I can tell you some what some districts have done in direct response to that is, and it's not addressed here, but it's, why not, is the code of conduct is year-round. It's not limited to your time in school. So if you're at a drinking party in the summer, it kicks in the fall. That's how some districts have approached it.
Yeah. You know,
we're not going to go there tonight.
Our code of conduct is in effect from August 15th when sports start until June 29th.
All I described is some have said it's 12 months.
It's like July and half of August.
To give you a short story, in July, there was a couple of incidents that happened last July at Plattsburgh State.
Yes.
And I've gotten grief for it because those kids are still allowed to participate in the fall sports and winter sports. And I explained to parents, our code of conduct ends the day of graduation. Doesn't extend to July. So whatever happens in July, those kids do.
And the nature of that piece, which it's not in here because that's a pretty bold step.
Sorry.
But it's the rationale for doing that in those districts that have made that decision is that, and I can speak this from a firsthand experience, I've had student and or family argue that getting caught when the child was caught basically was the reason that the code doesn't apply. We couldn't even get to the conversation of what was done. It was why you can't not let them be eligible.
Yeah, but the kids don't understand that. Well, he drank in July, he doesn't get in trouble. I drink in September and I can't play.
Yeah, I'm thinking illegal is illegal. Doesn't matter whether it's in July August.
Excellent point, Karen. It brings back again the distinction that is made between the school's laws and the court's laws. Mm-hmm. Illegal is illegal, you're absolutely correct. But according to, in its present form, it doesn't matter in the summer from the school's point of view. That's what some districts said we want to tackle.
The original intent of the code of conduct was to supervise student-athletes during the sports season. And if it's student-athletes and we've never gotten to the point, what about band members? What about Model UN members? They're not covered.
Oh, you know, we went around on that one.
Yeah, we did.
We had.
We left it in here, Ed. Didn't we? Well, I know we left the language there, and both of us were too... We left it in there to see if that's what you wanted this to be expanded to, because it brings with it the issue of extracurricular versus athletics.
Yeah.
Defining extracurriculars as something other than athletics. Here's where the dilemmas start coming in. I'm trying out for the play. What's 25% of a play?
Right. Yeah, we didn't
even
give it
an
extra
credit. You go to all the...
It's the part you're in.
That 25% of your role, which is three words. I don't mean to be facetious, but that was the point. When you think of extracurricular, and I'm not disputing at all, it's a tough question. To what do you, how do you attribute a penalty for a non-athlete?
Right. So why do we hold student-athletes to higher standards than other people?
Frank, you wanted to?
We do have a question.
I forgot my train of thought.
I'm sorry. I'll come back.
Are we done for you?
I think we have other work. I think we've done a lot on this reading. I think we should move on.
Does the superintendent have any questions on
that?
Yeah,
of course he does.
Do you have anything you wanted clarification on?
No, I think we'll take another run at this with the proposed changes.
I hate to do this. The one thing I spoke to Mr. Cook about earlier is where we're talking about, you know, let me get the page. Page 6, where it says, you know, the role of coaches. A coach is expected, it is suspected that the coach will be a role model and all that. You know, we did have that incident in our school system. What about, do we expect our coaches to obey the code of conduct, you know, at least, you know?
I thought we had a code of conduct that the coaches were signing on. No?
No.
We talked about it. maybe that's where I'm thinking of it, that we were supposed to come up with a conduct because of the language in here.
You know, obviously I don't think coaches should be not allowed to consume alcohol during the sports season. You know, we can't say you got to sign this code of conduct, but yes, they got to support the code of conduct, but no place do we have in there that they have to obey the principle of the code of conduct. You know?
Like, for example, if a coach drinking in front of a kid, you know, something like that. Now, he can drink, but if you do it in front of a kid, things like that.
Or have kids to their house and let them drink at their house. What?
I mean, that could be another big fight.
Which is the illegal part of it.
I quickly mentioned.
It's
not illegal.
That's
feasible.
Okay.
I have
one
question.
I remembered my question.
Okay.
Like, a lot of families will have a picnic over the summer, a family gathering. Let's face facts, alcohol is probably served to the adults. Does that apply if the students are there in the presence of alcohol?
I had this happen. Yeah,
it's in here somewhere.
Yeah, it is in here.
I did have this happen. That's kind of the discretion.
Yeah.
Like, if you're right, if my sister's getting married and I'm a high school athlete and I'm invited to the wedding, but I don't consume alcohol, but I'm around it.
Nobody can drink around you.
Yeah. You know, and just to give you a quick example, at the state meeting this past year, they wanted the coaches to sign a code of conduct that you could not drink before, during, obviously, or after a football game. We use football as an example. And I raised the question is, well, during I can understand, before I can understand, obviously, but if I'm in a bar restaurant after a game, if I'm in the ground round with my assistant coaches and my wives or our girlfriends, we're having a few beers after a game or drinks or sort, and some student athletes come in with their parents for dinner, who's to say that I can't have a cocktail with my friends? And that's right. and they're like, well, we didn't think of that part. Like, you're telling me because I'm over 21 that I can't go out and swear and have. But these are some of the questions that.
That's a real pause.
The presumption on drinking in the presence or being off campus and at a wedding or something, the inherent presumption is that there is a guardian voice there that has given consent for that to occur. And the school cannot impose the parental right to let you break a rule. All we can do is punish you if you have. And we try to, through the code, make that clear to not. That's why it's written for everybody. It's not just the student athlete. It's for the parents to understand as well. Do I anticipate, or would I anticipate, that we would be on a prosecution of a wedding party, and all that was said was three students served in the bridal party, and there was alcohol served, and it was July 14th. Hint, hint. A, it's in July. We have no provision for that. See my point? B, parents have given permission for whatever occurred at that event, and it doesn't affect your eligibility for this sport. Now, if that party's crashed by a policeman and you are arrested, we got another ballgame. Another issue entirely.
Okay, I have to invoke my power. We have to move on.
Bring that thing.
Thank you.
Ed, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ed, for your time and work on this.
I have one quick suggestion. I don't know whose it is, but Mrs. Turner walks in here tomorrow morning and sees that slice of pizza on that counter. She's like, food in your library. Man, somebody's got to get rid of that. Don't do that.
Thanks for that.
We better take that when we go.
Yeah.
I've been salivating the last hour.
Okay. Which brings us to additional items, and I do have an additional item that has been brought forward that I'd like to bring forward to the board through the committee that met today, the Thomas Group. And there is some information that we need to act on to get this started. It is kind of crucial. So if the board will permit me to bring this forward,
meet the students
through the committee, and I don't know who wants to take over this.
You know, you're doing the president.
Janet?
I got one.
Has anybody got one?
I gave you one, Steve.
I did, original, so if you need an extra one.
Earl, you don't have one?
Gave one to Jeff. Does Jeff get one of these or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no. I
don't
know.
We have enough?
Here.
Okay, yeah, we got one.
I got him.
We got him.
Okay. Well, I just wondered.
Okay, so I I don't know who wants to bring this.
Well, we met tonight, and the Thomas Group came and talked to us, and the figures that we are talking about, parts for XLA, are on the first page. It's going to be in the $6 million range. And to get some further recommendations from them and to keep us updated, I think it involved 8 meetings. Some of them there.
Page 2.
Page 3 is that?
Page 2.
Page 2? Oh, okay.
No, I guess that's just the schedule. It doesn't say.
Yeah,
it
is.
Excuse me.
But anyway, the what it comes to is the services that they'll be rendering for us. It comes to $18,500 if we okay this as a board. And,
this is just the.
This is the XL.
Just to
this
do the
is for XL.
Just to do the presentations.
Yeah. Do the present. Well, they've got to do their
legwork.
And they're going to bring us 2 presentations, according to what they said. One at the $6 million mark and one for between 9 and 10 million. It'll all be explained. That's not in here, I don't believe.
No.
And what it's going to do is this year is supposed to let us know what we possibly
could do for
6 and for 10.
And if we go to 10... But this, all of these have to go to vote, right?
Oh, they all have to go to vote.
But if we go to stay at the 6, it's no impact to the taxpayer.
Supposedly,
no impact.
They say
technically. I mean, from our point of view,
right,
be no impact.
Right.
But if we go to the 10, then we're looking at an impact.
If we went to 10, we're looking at we'd have to pay. If we went to 10, we'd have to pay about
75% of the 4.
We'd have to pay $1.7 million of our own money.
Yeah.
To go to 10.
But we do have money for that in the excess reserve fund. We have money for that, but there wouldn't be a tax levy for that. We could do it without a tax levy, but they're suggesting not to do that because if we want the athletic field, we can roll that all into one project and put it up that way. And
there's
one, 1 point. Well, do the 6 million.
Yeah, well,
do the extra 4 million with the athletic complex. And put that 1.7 from our reserve fund into that project
at a later time
to lower the tax event.
So we're trying to do now because we're in the tail end of the XL process. We're trying to get the $6 million done by May for a referendum at no cost to get it done, so we don't lose it. The rest at a later date. So that would cost. Trying to keep them separate.
Oh, you want to separate?
Yeah, we don't want them together.
Is there any way to provide us with projected budget information? In terms of where not just the 18,000 is going to come, but the break even, you're saying that we would break even or not have additional levy for the 6 million?
That's what's going to bring us the next time.
Before we just, we have to vote on that before
yes.
we can see those numbers.
Yeah, we're going to see the numbers before we even recommend anything. You know?
Yeah, but
we
got to
pay the 18,000.
We still have to pay the 18,000.
Oh, yeah, that we have to pay now. Because.
But does this include the football field? Because that's
No. That would end up being a totally separate project.
Okay, the $10 million would cover everything on the 5-year plan. If we went, they did the $10 million.
Plus
$10 million.
Some other stuff, probably.
Yeah, some other, but that would not include athletic. So there's another option that they're going to give us that he was talking about.
But right now, what we've got for the $6 million all comes under health and safety programs.
Which is SL.
Which is
XLA.
Well, we no longer have any trouble finding enough for XL.
It might be helpful to know that there are items more than $6 million that also qualify under health and safety, but the starting point was 6 at no cost. There are,
we can get that much done with no cost, and they come up with a tentative list of that stuff, and we feel it's important to get that going, so we can make sure it's on the goes out to vote in May.
Well, we already go over tonight. I mean, you know, it's all their time they come.
Karen?
I know I'm getting older, but when I went out and looked at state aid reports, I did not remember seeing $6 million XL aid. I thought I remember seeing $1.7 million XL aid.
it's how you, XL8 is something that is generated, and it's how you put it forward, and that's why they asked the Thomas Group to give the presentation. Okay.
And they will give us something in writing in advance of their meeting that we will have an opportunity to look at, because I've been in the business a long time. I've been out of it for a couple of years.
Also,
but there's never been a building project that I've been involved with that was zero cost. Because right. You have building aid ratios and you have bond percentages, and they're never 100%.
But that's what's different about XL8.
Well, the one thing about XL8 to make it down dirty quick is we have a $1.7 million of XL money that we are given as a district. If we apply that money for an XL project, that turns into $6 million that we can get done. The 1.7 would be our point. Anything above that, we'd have to kick in our own money.
So what you're telling me, and that with $1.7 million, you can get $6 million worth of value.
Right, but they're telling us.
Okay. I'm from the old school, and I'm having a hard time with that.
I think I remember that. Though. Presented that. I do remember that.
I know, but that's why, Frank, I want to see it in writing. I want to see how they're doing it.
70%, some of it's 85%.
85%. We got 88.5%.
So that 1.7.
Why do we have to decide this? Like, why can't we decide this the first week of December?
We could. But they've already started to work, that's all.
Huh?
They're already working.
You see, we're
and they're going to do those reports for us for the next meeting for December, so then we're into another meeting.
So where does the 18,000 come out? I know.
Yeah,
slash. But that's not a good word.
It would come out of our legal fund. Wouldn't be legal?
Wouldn't it come out of our XL money? Or
no.
Like that?
No.
I mean, part of that.
We don't know where we're going to take the money.
Well, Ron's not here, so that would be
a wrong
question.
But the thing is, we can't make any decisions until we get numbers. I mean, we can't get anything done unless they do it.
I know, but let's not be foolhardy. I mean, I would like to know where the money's coming from. Like, we just transferred all this money from health insurance into the last couple of weeks ago.
Yes, actually last month.
The transferring piece that you're referring to is money put in its appropriate location versus new money.
Right.
This is finding a source to pay for pursuing the bigger project. So the question of there's a bill that's going to come from this group for whatever it is, 18 or whatever, 18,000. Is there a line item in the current budget that speaks to that? I doubt it. But the purpose of pursuing it is to get at the $10 million value for relatively no cost to the taxpayer. It takes this amount of money to say this is what you're worth.
No,
this
I
is
understand
what you're
the value. Why?
No,
and
by
rationale, but it,
ultimately it comes out of the fund balance. Ultimately, it's fund
but
balance.
I don't want anyone to be uncomfortable. I guess
right,
that's my first
right.
thought is, what account am I going to take out?
Well, ultimately, it's fund balance. When it all comes down to it, that's where the greatest percentage of money is located for events like this. It requires the board action, though, to approve doing it.
Our action tonight, does it have to be specific to who we want to take the money from?
No. I couldn't tell you. But if I said fund balance, then it covers everything.
If there's a transfer, we're going to see that in another meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to.
It'd be an expense. It would be listed as an expense coming out.
Ron will have to
say
at
the December meeting.
It's 18.5. That would be a very monthly. What they do. So it might not be able to share the budget.
No, that's true. Yeah, Joanne is saying that if the contract is written in a way that says it's not a lump sum payment, then it could carry over from one year to the other. The actual payments could be monthly as opposed to a lump sum. I don't know if there's an advantage or disadvantage of making a lump sum or not, but the long and short of it is the cost to do it will ultimately be traced back to a fund balance. Something got transferred to make room to spend it this way. And it was transferred because it was taken from fund balance to now do it.
Because if they don't charge us interest to do monthly payments, and we already started on the project,
they won't. And the other thing to say is they gave us a cut break because we've had trouble with them before. They cut down the price. It's less than they would charge.
There is an unclassified line item of $10,000 in the budget, 1989.400.
That's 10,000.
Which places? I guess I just can't tonight. I couldn't tell you which line item it is, but we can get that.
I think the decision the board has to make tonight is this something we have want to move ahead with? We've got an awful lot of money out there at stake. I think we have to move on it. We can't lose.
We want to do it by the March referendum. So
yes,
we're pressed.
Before May.
It'll be with the May budget. That's what we want to do it. At that time.
I'll vote on it in March.
Yeah.
You're right. We'll publish it.
Yeah.
Right. Number of days ahead.
This is why they want to hurry and get this back to us before we can study it and make our decisions on it.
Well, the clock is also ticking with XLA.
Yeah.
I mean, we're running on.
We don't want to lose it either.
That's exactly why we want this $6 million, and the time schedule is already put out here. We can wait till December to approve it and know what the funds is coming from. I think they'd still do the work for us.
Yeah,
I believe they would.
It's only a couple weeks away.
It's a couple weeks away, but they're going to be back here on December the 11th to give us the next piece of information,
too. I would say look bad if we didn't.
I asked this question at a committee meeting. Do we have to do it tonight? You know?
They're going to do it, so we might as well do it tonight.
Yeah. Well, at least we wanted to bring it before the board here and it's your decision at this point.
Well, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Well, the rules are
Yes. Motion was by
George.
By George. Seconded by Frank.
To pay the Thomas Group $18,500.
Is to hire the Thomas Group.
At the cost of $18,500.
At the cost of
$18,500.
It's on page two.
You might want to write it the way that it's spelled out there.
Pending review by our
board. Yes. Services rendered in invoice based upon a stipulation fee of $18,500 plus any reimbursable expense based upon an initial referendum to be voted on in the May 2008. And also to add to that pending review of our lawyer.
Okay.
Further discussion.
Further discussion.
So
I'm sorry, I have to ask, but yes.
Just for clarification, if we vote on this, when we vote on this evening, we're approving $18,500, but we're not locking into anything tonight
other than to spend
this amount of money.
To have them develop some plans.
This is just a development of a plan.
We're essentially saying we want Thomas Group to do it, not Bernier Carr, not whoever else.
They would need to do a bid.
Joanne, we're going to need a roll call.
The motion will be that you will enter into this letter of intent with this company, which is the DBA Thomas Group.
Yes.
For $18,500, pending review of the school attorney.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Steve Trembley.
Yes.
George Palmer.
Yes.
Herb Bonnell.
Yes.
Frank Kay.
Yes.
Kathleen Grinberg Funes.
Yes.
Leonard King.
Yes.
Karen Armstrong.
Yes.
Richard Levine.
Yes.
Stan Karofsky.
Yes. Is there any other additional items to discuss?
As long as we're talking here on this here, the operations committee did learn, and I think you know already, the Cumberland Head project has been approved. I don't know if Chris
on the state level.
So when are they going to do it? This summer, coming summer, or are they going to start?
They're going to be on site in December, looking at it.
December.
Yeah. They're going to look at it in December and maybe start.
And bring definitely have it completed before the start is September 08.
And I have one thing to bring. I kind of mentioned this to Scott earlier before our meeting started. CDPH is contemplating closing the mental health for the youth program. They're in fact having a meeting today, I think this evening at Plattsburgh High, a public hearing on it. As a board, I think we should be very concerned because right now we can transfer students that are in distress to CDPH to be treated. If they close that unit, it's Saratoga,
Augsburg.
Augsburg. And I don't even know if Augsburg, it might be Saratoga. So, I mean, and it's not going to just affect our district, it's going to affect all districts. So I don't know if we can, and Scott said we're going to bring it up to him.
Yeah, we have a district or a superintendent's meeting with the district superintendent tomorrow, and I'll see if it's on the agenda. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. But if it's not on the agenda, I certainly will bring it forward as a, with your permission, a collective concern about it. And in addition to that, if you would so wish, I certainly can write a letter expressing your wishes that it not happen on the board's behalf.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, even if it's a monetary thing, I mean, it is a service to this community, and I don't think this is a hot question. You look at bottom line all the time. You know, obviously, they do.
That unit is full all the time, and they have like 6 and 7.
And I don't know if it's because of the reimbursement rate that the that they're being reimbursed, you know, and they're so they're losing money, even though it's full.
Yes. Memorial operations. We decided tonight, the fourth Tuesday of the month at 4:30, except for December 11th, will be on December on the 11th. But the fourth Tuesday of the month is when we'll meet.
And your next meeting is on December 11th at 4:30.
Yes. December 11th at 4:30.
And our second meeting.
We don't want to go there at Christmas.
Yes. Second meeting.
Yes, canceled. So, when will the operations or when would the audit committee meet again?
Probably we'll meet at the same time at the before the next December meeting.
Which meeting?
The December 11th.
Oh.
Because we're not having a second meeting in December.
And we'll have the reports we need by that meeting.
If we have the reports, if we do not have the reports, I'll check on that. See if that's something you'll have.
FYI, that's over the drink.
We'll bring our celebratory things and have them available.
Thank you. That's all I've got.
Okay. Any other additional? And you better be fast with it if you got them, because we do have. Executive session, and it will be to discuss the support staff association and collective bargaining negotiation. I need a motion.
I'll make a motion. We go on executive session.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye. No kidding about a 5-minute break.
We'll have a 5-minute break before we enter. Thank you, everyone, for coming and attending. We'll have to ask you to.
For executive.
Yes.
It's going to be an hour.
Time
sensitive.
We have to do that. Well, that's what we're trying to do.
We're maybe cutting things out to make it short.
Yeah, we may short.
The question is on this. It's information only.
Okay.
But I brought it. Because, yes. But I have since drafted a letter explaining what I plan to do because of this. So.
That's fine, I think.
But I guess what I'm saying is,
So he went to the last game, so he had a night. You know, he was just a mess. How do I get to the next?